This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Makerculture, taking things into our own hands.
A podcast series by 2009 online journalism students at Ryerson University in Toronto, Ontario.
And at the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario.
In 2003, Margaret Hastings James took to the road on her bike. She was fed up with the overcrowded Toronto transit system and decided to find a new way to get around the city. One day, as she was biking along, a truck pulls up alongside her. Now, as they approach an intersection, the truck decides to turn right into Margaret.
Luckily, it was moving slow enough that I had time to roll out from under before the back wheels crushed me, but my bike was sort of dragged up into the undercarriage, and the guy kept driving for about 50 meters with like sparks and everything flying up. My bike was completely totaled, and I was sort of left in a crumpled mass on the side of the road. Like, I was really lucky it was slow enough I wasn't hit with it by another car coming along.
Margaret hadn't done anything wrong. She was following the rules of the road, and they almost got her killed. The driver was charged with dangerous driving, but for Margaret, that wasn't enough.
He was found to be at fault, but, you know, if I died, who cares, right? Whose fault it is, I'm dead.
Hoping things will change isn't good enough. You have to get involved. So that's what Margaret did. She joined the Toronto Cyclists Union, and she's now a member of the Toronto Cycling Committee. In October, Margaret was an organizer for Bike Camp. It's an event which brought together politically savvy cyclists. Their goal is to plan a campaign agenda for Toronto's 2010 municipal election to gather support from the community and to educate people about bike issues. Hundreds of bikers gathered at the Center for Social Innovation to share ideas and democratically choose what projects they wanted to work on. Margaret moderated brainstorming sessions throughout the day, delegating responsibilities and challenging others to do more. She's taking charge and working to make her community a better place. Margaret's a change maker.
Welcome to the politics episode of the Maker Culture Podcast, co-published by Rabble.ca and thetie.ca.
In this series, we're exploring people who are embracing the do-it-yourself ethos and changing our world in the process.
Today, we'll be looking at how ordinary people can make a difference in their homes, communities, and countries. Reimagining the political process, one voice at a time. In London, Ontario, activism is on the rise. Case in point, the London Activist Assembly. They're an offshoot of a social justice group at the University of Western Ontario. Frustrated with overly restrictive rules, the group decided to drop the university affiliation and go rogue. Since it started in September, the assembly has grown to 50 members. The primary focus is on issues that affect university students, like high tuition fees, but the group is also working to promote environmental sustainability, as well as independent media in London. Heather Graham is a founding member of the London Activist Assembly. She thinks her work is important in the community.
You have to work outside of the system in order to change it and to make real impacts on it. You can't work within it. And you need to take the issues that are important to you into your own hands and not rely on systems that are often corrupt and don't have the interests of humans first.
The negative stereotypes associated with activism have made it a challenge to find like-minded people.
Generally speaking, the activist community is underground for a lot of it. It's not out in the open. It's not well received by a lot of the public. I think that networking has taken large steps in the last couple of years to really bring a lot of the activist groups together. I think that we've done a pretty decent job at that.
The London Activist Assembly does a lot of networking by hosting weekly potlucks. Everyone is welcome, and the group uses the gatherings to socialize and attract new members.
Sure. But I mean, it's not pizza without cheese. It's not,
yeah, right. That's my view as well.
But yeah, no.
Other activist groups have also adopted the potluck approach. The London-based Empowerment Info Shop promotes social justice and human rights issues. Every Wednesday, they host a potluck dinner at their headquarters in downtown London. Week after week, activists who are hungry for change come out to fill their bellies and their minds. Alex Balch is a regular at these potlucks. He's a member of Common Cause London, a group that tries to establish a respectable name for anarchism.
Common Cause, we actually pay dues, so it's more of an actual organization. It's sort of almost like structured more like a union than you would actually expect. So it's not really what most people would actually have in mind when they think about an anarchist organization. Some people think that that whole idea is an oxymoron.
Anthony Verberkmas, another member of the group, says not all anarchist organizations are as formal as Common Cause. However, anarchist actions are becoming more visible in society, and he says anarchism's on the rise.
In the last 10 years or so, since the Seattle protests, definitely, but in broad ways, not always organized like Common Cause, things like Food Not Bombs, indie media, punk music, anti-racist action is an informal group that's spread everywhere. In conservative places like London, even, there's active resistance to fascist and racist actions locally. That's all anarchist influenced.
And anarchist influenced movements don't have to be limited to organized events or meetings.
I don't really like isms in general. I mean, I find that they're fairly limiting, but anarchism, to use the actual, like, ism is sort of just a suffix that you add, right? So anarchism is not really rigid. It's not really an ideology, and there's lots of space for experimentation, and it just sort of fits with what a lot of us perceive as the problems with the world today.
The number of grassroots activists in London continues to grow, and with it, the likelihood of change does too. But change doesn't come without some kind of cooperation. Up next, we'll look at changemakers who are rebuilding community in a digital age.
A student, a businessman, and a politician walk into a bar. That sounds like the setup for a pretty bad joke, but it's actually the start of a new take on political discourse. It's Change Camp, a community-based initiative that aims to get people talking, to build community, and to reimagine citizenship in the age of participation.
It's a funny new idea, and the whole idea of change is always sort of intimidating to those who are benefiting from the status quo, and it's always sort of there's a little bit of apprehension there.
Michael Jans is the director of marketing for the Edmonton Federation of Community Leagues. He attended Change Camp Edmonton on October 17th.
Change Camp's the avenue where I can bring a half-baked, half-thought-out idea, come there, bounce it around with people, get some other inputs, get some other consultation, and then there's a team of people who might be interested to help me. It's a new citizen-style think tank. You don't need to just turn to the Fraser Institute or the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. New results can be coming organically right out of the coffee shops in your community.
In Alberta, this movement was sparked by the passing of the controversial Bill 44. This was legislation that allows parents to pull their children out of classes that talk about subjects such as homosexuality, same-sex marriage, or in extreme cases, even evolution. Dave Cornoyer is a political blogger in Alberta. He says Bill 44's passing really got people talking.
There seemed to be a tipping point when Bill 44 came to the legislature in the spring. And I know a lot of people who it really got them thinking about politics and got them thinking about what the hell is going on in Alberta. Who are these guys who we elected and what do they think they're doing?
Questions like this led almost 200 people to gather in a conference hall at the University of Alberta to discuss issues, politics, how they could make things better. The event brought together an eclectic group. There are people from the public sector, people from the private sector, students, parents, and even two MLAs, one conservative and one liberal. By the simple act of coming together, they got the ball rolling, taking the first steps on the road to change.
The motto of Change Camp, reimagining government in the age of participation. And I mean, that's kind of a flaky slogan, but I think it means different things to different people. And I think for a lot of people, it's about recreating value and participating in governance. I think you see a lot of people who've just opted out of being involved in, you know, whether it's voting or even caring about what happens in their government because they don't see value in it. They don't think they can have input, or they don't think, and I think it's happens both ways. I don't think government in generally is responsive to changes in society. It's a big machine. It takes a long time to change. But that also means that there have to be people on the inside and the outside who are pushing it forward.
Up next, we head east to Toronto and visit the birthplace of Change Camp.
Coming up with new political ideas doesn't guarantee change. Someone can have the best idea in the world, but if they keep it to themselves, it won't make a difference. It won't make the world a better place. People need to come together to share ideas in order for movements to catch on and changes to occur. In Toronto, there's an office building that understands the need for collaboration. It's called the Center for Social Innovation, or the CSI for short. It opened in 2003 as a physical version of online networking spaces like Facebook. Now, over 150 social organizations work out of the building. It's different from other office buildings because it emphasizes sharing. Sharing space, sharing resources, and sharing information and ideas. Mark Kuznicki is one of the tenants at the building. He's been here for 2.5 years.
Coming into the Center for Social Innovation was, for me, really important in terms of finding like-minded people. That's what the center is here to do, is to co-locate a lot of people that want to make a difference, and hopefully from that spawn off like collaborations and projects or ideas or an exchange of knowledge and capabilities that you wouldn't normally have.
One of the more recent projects that's come out of the CSI is Open Data Toronto. Kuznicki is a key organizer of this movement that launched its website in November 2009. The site gives citizens access to the City of Toronto's official data, from apartment standards to solid waste management districts. You might be thinking, how does open data benefit citizens?
The open data movement describes a movement for governments to open up the data that basically the public funds and ultimately owns back to the public in an open access and machine readable format. So it's a way of really getting data out into much more useful forms for regular people. But it's going to be developers that are going to be turning the raw data into something useful.
Opening things up to the public is a central idea of the CSI. The building operates on an open space concept. Tenants can access common areas, and the CSI has a hot desk package for people who want to rent out a desk for fixed periods of time. It's a new approach to life at the office, and as Judy Rebick says, it's a new approach to making political change.
I think the Center for Social Innovation is one of the places that are trying to do social change in a different way. And, I think they make a good contribution. What the CSI is doing in Toronto is very, very good because they create a space for discussion and dialogue, and they're supporting a lot of groups who are contributing to making change.
That was Judy Rebick. Her latest book, called Transforming Power, talks about different political movements led by ordinary citizens hungry for change. Up next, Homegrown Revolution. A people come together to elect one of their own for the first time in 470 years. Bolivians have a lot to celebrate. In 2005, Evo Morales became the first indigenous Bolivian to run the country in 470 years. And in January, they held a referendum to approve a new constitution. It passed with 66% of the vote, and the indigenous people were granted more power and representation.
Historically, Latin America was plagued by war, guerrilla movements, so we've seen a transition from to the ballot, from the bullet, basically.
Raul Burbano is a member of Toronto Bolivia Solidarity. In January, he traveled to Bolivia to document the referendum. He's returning in December for the upcoming presidential election, where he plans to film democracy in action.
Bolivia is a wonderful example of it. It has a strong focus on the indigenous, the workers, the women, the students, which are moving away from the traditional institutions, from the political parties, from the religious institutions, and maybe have said, and basically have said that we now are going to determine our future for the first time since the Spaniards came and colonized the country.
Despite the accomplishments of the Bolivians, the mainstream media have by and large ignored their successes. Judy Rebick holds the Sam Gidden Chair in Social Justice and Democracy at Ryerson University. She says news organizations haven't been covering Bolivia because they can't villainize Evo Morales.
reasons. He's humble, he's indigenous, you know, he's made life much better for the poor, he's nationalized electricity, nationalized gas, and all. In some ways gone further than Chavez, but what's more interesting is that his government is totally based on the mobilization of mass movement. He's not an individual leader, he's part of a movement. And I think that if Bolivia got more publicity, it would be so inspiring for people to want change, and that's why they don't get it.
The election of Morales might sound like a fairy tale, but change like this doesn't happen overnight. It takes years of hard work and dedication. Jose Antonio Lucero has been studying Bolivia for 10 years. He's an assistant professor of international studies at the University of Washington. He says Morales is the fruit of Bolivian labor.
You know, it's important not to see this as kind of a top-down phenomenon. It's not that Evo kind of descended from the heavens and, you know, rallied his people. He's really the outcome of a long process of organizing and a long process of resistance that goes from the bottom up.
And that's it for this episode of Maker Culture, Taking Things into Our Own Hands. If you'd like to send us feedback on this show or any episode in this series, you can do that at makingmakers@me.com.
And please join in the discussion on Babbel at rabble.ca/babbel or on the Tai'i at thetai'i.ca. We'd love it if you subscribe to this series on the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca/RPN or in iTunes so you can get the next episode fresh from our maker hands to your ears.
We're going to leave you with a song now from Ivy League. In the spirit of changemakers, this is 2020. You can learn more about Ivy League at myspace.com/Ivy League.
Thanks for listening. Remember, it's your world. What are you going to make of it?
Come off it, kid. She's got more foresight than you. Saw you coming for miles, had a chance to think it through. She'll bury you, then evict you, then assault you and equip you. Soon enough, you walk behind a leash, she'll gag you when you argue. The target is your ego, central agent, sense of self. Not to mention the patch of a bleeding all of men have felt. Love is not even the issue. You've gained more than enough to lose. It's your self-respect that's being stalled. There's nothing you can do. I got 20-20 and I got my eye on you, kid. I think it's 20-20 that you're making numerous bids. You might make plenty money, but that don't mean much to me. Cause what we put your study very vigorously. Lowercase Q, I dreamed of being on the mic like a priest upon a pew. Wasn't tall, but eventually I grew. Once I hit 5'9", there was nothing I couldn't do. Had a plethora of people telling me philosophies, theoretically claiming to be visionary. See, thankfully I'm an entity of individuality. Normality is relative to where you live. I got 20-20 and I got my eye on you, kid. I think it's 20-20 that you're making numerous bids. You might make plenty money, but that don't mean much to me. Cause we put your study very vigorously.
Individuality, definitely, definitely, we're here to promote individuality.